Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other things at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Did you know that you can actually abbreviate that to fb.com/ballisticradio? You don't actually have to type out the Facebook.
No, I didn't know that. No.
Yeah. So apparently Zuckerberg owns the fb.com domain name. But hey, co-hosting with me, Melody Lauer.
Merhaba.
What language was that?
That was apparently Turkish. And if I didn't do that right, I apologize.
Do you know how many people you're offending?
I'm trying to be...
I mean, I don't think our listeners... Yeah, I don't think our listenership's super high in Turkey. I could look. I know we're kind of big in South Africa, which is cool. And also Australia, oddly enough.
Really?
Yeah.
That actually does surprise me.
Yeah. I was sitting
there wishfully thinking...
Well, I mean...
The self-defense stuff in general, yes, but...
Well, I mean, you know, just because you live in a... Nope.
Anyway, pattern's full.
Yeah. Hey, guess what?
What's that, John?
This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition at LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. Remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, you can never really have too much ammo. Or maybe if you're like doing one of those like grocery trip walks from the car, you know, where it's like, I've got to get every bag. And
why wouldn't you just take the cart?
No.
From the car to the house.
From the car to the house.
Gotcha.
And like Lucky Gunner drops stuff off, and for whatever reason, you're including it in the...
In your grocery shop.
Yeah, so you've got like, you know, 9,000 rounds of 9mm plus 12 bags of...
You know when you can have too much ammo? When you are a UPS delivery person and you're delivering to like one of our houses.
Oh, yeah.
Then you're like, I hate this person.
I'm adding that to the ad.
Because, I mean, we all know the poor delivery people.
Hey, speaking of, absolutely no good way to segue into this, so I'm just going to say speaking of, joining us is Gabe White. Gabe, how's it going, man?
Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, I cannot complain.
I have to ask Gabe a question real quick.
Sure.
Have you ever had a delivery person just give you side eye after delivering ammo to you?
I don't know. I'm not usually there when it gets delivered. It gets accepted by somebody else.
You're like, this is purposeful.
I have been. So I've actually had 70,000 rounds of ammo dropped off at my house.
Oh.
And Melody's seen my house. So the semi truck pulls up, and I guess they didn't tell the guy there was no lift gate. Like there's, and he's like, I got a pallet of ammo, and I'm like, cool. The garage is down there. And he's like, I'm like, no, I'm just messing with you, man. Just drop it here. But it was funny.
I'm laughing because I'm like, oh, man, if there was going to be a murder.
Oh, it was good. It was good. So, and funny enough, when you're using a handcart to get that much ammo down, like
it's a workout.
It's like a 20 degree angle, you know.
It's steep.
Yeah. That can get away from you real easy. Not that I almost put a pallet of ammo through the side of my house or anything. But anyway, for those that don't know, man, so Gabe is one of my very favorite guests and has been an incredible mentor and inspiration to me over the years. So we've known each other like, what, 5 or 6 years now?
Yeah, something like that.
Jeez. But what do you do, man? What's your shtick? And you've actually got kind of a new shtick coming up too, right?
Yeah, my life is about to change. So, well, for a long time, I've just been a serious practitioner of defensive handgun and concealed carry, and that's, you know, followed the very common route of you get abducted into training, and eventually, you know, as I've progressed there, I've been the chief instructor for the public program at a shooting range locally run by one of the sheriff's offices, and done my own training thing on the outside as well, and competition from concealed carry. And that's how, you know, one of those ways is usually how most people know me in the shooting world.
Right.
But what's going to change for me, which is just awesome and just going to be a wonderful advancement in my true profession, is I'm going to be able to leave my day job, so to speak, that didn't have anything to do with guns. That's finally coming to an end, and we've got a full-time position now working at the range, same range, the Public Safety Training Center in Clackamas, run by the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, and I'm going to be the full-time person working at the range and teaching, basically doing what I do now, just full-time instead of part-time. But it's going to be great. It's going to be the first, you know, explicitly gun-friendly job I'll have had, and I'll be at the range like every day, and it'll be a lot of opportunity to practice and improve my own skills and devote full-time attention to the program there. And so, you know, so if anybody's looking to train with me locally, that's definitely the place.
Well, so the exciting part for me about this means you might actually get to, like, have a social media presence now and, like, post stuff.
That's right.
So I'm, like, dying for you to post stuff on the Instagrams to, like, show the Instagram people what happens when you don't speed your videos up and can still shoot that way. So it's just...
People speed their videos up on Instagram?
Yes. Yes, they do.
Oh, this just shows Gabe's innocence of social media, which I find so endearing.
That's true.
Well,
that's so funny.
So the best part is, like, video.
He was actually shocked. That,
yeah, he was.
Do that?
So, and what's funny is they're getting really, really good at it. And the only way I can tell is that there seems to be this weird gravity field around these people, where, like, brass and magazines falls faster than gravity. You know, just like it does, right?
I mean,
that happens around you, right?
That's amazing.
So anyway. I'll tell you what I want to get into, man.
I love his maniacal laughing.
Yeah,
this is amazing.
I do too. So here, we will plug something real quick, and this will be the maybe first. Well, we'll probably have said it on the internet, but we're actually going to be out at that range teaching our armed parent material at the end of August next year. Looks like.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. That's going to be great, and that's something else that's going to be cool about the range is that we're looking to get, you know, some quality training from the outside in there to an extent. And so I'm really glad that we're going to be hosting you.
Quality training. Oh, and you guys are coming. I was like, I'm glad we fooled you. But so no, seriously, here's what I kind of want to talk about, man. Is there any traditional sort of wisdom about here's how you shoot well that you don't agree with, or you go, well, maybe at the beginning we want to teach it this way, but in reality, when you start getting to, I guess, like, when do we start breaking the rules to do things?
Oh, that's a cool question. I like that question.
We've only got about 2.5 minutes in this segment, so it's gonna bleed into the next one. But
okay, no problem. Well, I think that probably the second part of the question is the better one. I don't know that I could think of anything off the top of my head of traditionalist marksmanship or gun handling training that I just flat disagree with. But I do think that there's quite a bit of it that is a good way to start out and not the best way to continue forever.
Mm-hmm.
And there are probably a number of things that fall into that category. So to start with a really probably kind of overdone one that people talk about a lot is the recognition of trigger reset. You know, I think it's worth speaking to that early on so that people can recognize that that is a thing. It is a part of the triggering of the gun. It's in there. You have to let the trigger forward at least that far. I don't agree with the idea that it should be, you should only let the trigger further as far forward as it needs to reset and no further, though. Mm-hmm. That's how I was taught, and I found that I left it behind not as a conscious choice, just simply out of attempting to shoot more aggressively. I'd, you know, stop at the end of a string, and as I'm about to take my finger off the trigger and put it in register, I kind of recognize, hey, why is my finger, like, halfway into the slack? I've let it further forward than the reset. Why is that? Because I, at the time, consciously adhered to minimal trigger reset, but it just kind of emerged that I just did it another way when I was trying to shoot more aggressively. And so, you know, I think it's okay to start there, though I wouldn't want to tell people that you should only let it forward to the reset. But there should be some attention given to, hey, this is a, I mean, I'm talking day one of pistol training, right? That this is a thing, this is a part of the trigger pull, you need to be aware of it, and it's okay to let it further forward. That's a pretty superficial example, and I think that there are some other bigger ones that we can, you know, get into as well.
Yeah, so we'll do that, because I've got one that Melody sort of brought up to me that was sort of interesting anyway, but we'll get into that in the break. Right now we're talking with Gabe White, and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scattergun since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match grade accuracy, superior ergonomics and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Gabe White about, nerd stuff, because whenever Gabe and I get together, that's what we do, and we're gathered here, and we're kind of together, so let's talk about nerd stuff. So you were talking about, like, trigger reset, and I guess we were sort of discussing, like, traditionally held views, and when do we... You know, when do things change based off of where we're at? Melody was having a conversation with Claude Werner about full firing grip on the gun during the draw stroke. And it occurred to me that I teach a full firing grip on the gun when I instruct people. But when I'm actually drawing the gun, I don't have a full firing grip until probably after the gun's cleared the holster. What do you think about that?
Oh, that's a good one. That one hadn't come to mind yet, but yeah, I think that's a great example. I also teach get the full firing grip, and I do that. But there's a, you know, when you make things happen as fast as your hands can move, or if that's the goal and you're getting close to that, mm-hmm. edges get rounded off. It's just kind of how it is. Edges get rounded off, and where I think that applies more to me in the grip discussion with regard to that is the support hand grip. Usually we teach get the support hand, you know, fully on the gun at what we typically might refer to as position three, when the hands join close to the body, and then extend the gun. Now, in reality, if all of the things are progressing at full speed, I'm putting the support hand on the grip there, but it's not actually closed and pressured completely on the grip until pretty much the end, when the gun is stopping. Right. And that's actually one of the mechanisms that I use to arrest the movement of the gun as smoothly as possible, is to apply the pressures of the support hand grip and all the wrist tension and arm and chest positional pressures, just the upper body shooting structure from the, you know, the hands to the arms and the torso behind it, of getting into that position and applying those pressures to arrest the gun smoothly at the end. And so for me, support hand grip is really not completely established. It's being put in place on the way out, and it's finally established there at the end. And, you know, I know you could probably maybe a little bit of that applies earlier to the master grip. Mm-hmm. I guess that kind of depends on the person. That sounded like maybe what you were referring to. One of the things in my own draw that has some people have kind of looked at with a little bit of a furrowed brow a couple of times, is when I get master grip on the holstered gun, my thumb is kind of on the back of the slide, or a little bit to the ultimately to the side, the support side of the gun where it's going to go,
yep.
but not really over, not really all the way over there.
Yep.
And there was some question about that, you know, in actually it was back in ECQC, because that could be a problem, right? I mean, you know, if you get the gun out and you're holding the gun that way, gun's not fireable, your grip is compromised, that could be an issue. And I would agree with that, though that's probably also well countered with that's a time, you know, we're talking about timing decisions
right.
in ECQC situation more than, you know, you're not relying on is your thumb here or there
yeah.
to stop the gun from being able to be ripped away from you. That's not what it's going to be about, though certainly better grip is better. But anyway, you know, Craig kind of asked me about that and looked at it, and it was never an issue because of one, timing decisions, but two, what I ended up doing was putting my draw on high speed video to see what I was actually doing, because a lot of times what you feel like you're doing
yeah.
may not really be what you are doing. So, and it's worth looking at that. So I looked at that on high speed video, and basically by the time the gun has lifted and not even come out of the holster yet, my thumb has fallen onto the correct side of the gun. I'm not burning the probably, you know, 0.2 seconds to dive it in between the gun and my body when I'm getting master grip. I'm going ahead and, you know, proceed just a hair sooner than that. But I do have the back strap seated in my palm and the front strap seated in my fingers. That I do have.
Well, and it seems like a lot of that, too, is going to be very dependent on your hand geometry and also your body geometry. So I'll tell
yeah.
you what's been incredibly frustrating and interesting to me is so I've lost a bit of weight and my draw stroke has changed. Like the way I drew the gun at 290 pounds is not the way I can draw the gun at 212 pounds.
Interesting.
Yeah, like the first time I tried it, I actually I ate the rear sight into the bottom of my ribs. Because I was used to the gun just being it really was on. Melody's just like trying not to laugh right now.
Well, I was just thinking the times I've eaten it into the bottom of my boob. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. And it was, well, literally just the gun stopped and I'm like, ow, you know, but it was funny though, because I was used to the firing being further away from my body and it gave me, you know, it gave me more, more clearance, I guess, you know, I wasn't used to my chest being bigger than my gut and all of a sudden it was, and I'm like, oh, this is odd. So here's a question that I have as far as you sort of touched on it, but like something that I have struggled with in where to make up time. You were talking about the end of the presentation, so like how you arrest the motion of the gun. And ideally, we want to be able to cover the space between, you know, position three, so like collecting the gun, and position four, full extension, firing the gun. We want to be able to cross that distance as quickly as possible, but we don't want to have a whole bunch of, you know, as Scott Jedlinski would call it, earthquake movement at the end. And the way I have done that is I am slow between position three and position four. And you're saying you don't establish your full left-handed grip until the end, and that's actually how you're arresting that motion?
Well, I would describe it. Yes, but I'd describe it a little differently, maybe. I'm sending the gun out without delay and establishing support hand grip as soon as I can. And what that amounts to is it's really only finalized as the gun is stopping at the end. It doesn't get – I don't finalize it and then send it out. I'm getting the hands together as the gun is continuing to move without pausing there and sending the gun out as fast as I can – as fast as I can send my hands out. Like a punch or like an eye jab. Like think of Craig's old finger flicking eye jab, like
sure.
kind of like that. Putting the support hand grip on also without delay. But what that all adds up to is it's only really got all its pressures in place by the end.
Well, it kind of reminds me too when you break down all of these little segments. This sounds really slow, and it reminds me of something that you said when we took our class or the class with you in Missouri, that you know these things sound slow, and it sounds like you're adding too much complexity into that. But when you're doing it as fast as you humanly possibly can, these things are happening almost instantaneously, and they're happening at such a speed that once you do them in the correct sequence, instantly, it all works together. Like, for instance, in the class, you were talking specifically about when to get your finger on the trigger. And, you know, you're talking about moving that finger from the, you know, that high register onto the trigger. But if you are moving your hands as fast as you can, by the time your gun is out of the holster and orienting towards the target, your finger is not going to meet the trigger until you're already on the press out because of how fast you're moving. And so I would like to hear you talk a little bit more about that, too.
Sure. Actually, that's a good one because that's all part of the package of things that are going on along with what we just talked about, support hand grip closing on the gun.
Sure.
So my attempt is to begin to put my finger into the trigger guard, you know, begin the process of moving it out of register and proceed with the trigger press as the hands are coming together at position three. Now, what that actually amounts to, again, because the whole thing is continuing to move along, is that my finger is leaving register. And this was this is what I saw also in that same high-speed video where I was looking at what am I doing with my thumb. This is another thing I looked at that same time. Because, you know, when you put your finger on the trigger, it is very important.
Yes.
For safety and accountability, it's really critical. And so I wanted to review what was I doing at full speed.
Well, so hold that thought real quick, because we're going to need to go to break. And I feel like this is a good pause for that. But we're talking about all sorts of technical minutiae that is either really interesting to you or you're not quite there yet, but you will be one day if you work hard enough, with Gabe White. And you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment also brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the new 1200-lumen EDCL 2T handheld or a 500-lumen EDCL 1T handheld to the 1000-lumen XH30 or the brand new upgraded, fits in all your old duty holsters and regular holsters, X300 with 1,000 lumens. Surefire can make sure you never have to yell Aziz Light ever again. Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. So we're talking with Gabe White, and before the break, we were discussing how things happen, especially at speed, and you were talking about when the finger ends up on the trigger, and then I interrupted you. I apologize.
No problem. So what I was saying is that as my hands are coming together at basically position three, that's when I'm beginning the process, the factually multi-part process of finger leaving register, entering the trigger guard, and beginning to make contact with the trigger and ultimately culminating in active trigger manipulation. But those things are happening concurrently with the gun being extended, which is to say, at full speed, which is to say that when the hands are coming together, that's when my finger is leaving register. The hands are together and the gun is on its way out. By the time the finger has moved down to the trigger guard and begun to enter it, and the gun is in the last couple inches of extension and decelerating to a stop by the time I am actually putting any pressure on the trigger at all. And so this all has to be contextual too, right? I mean, it has to be a decision, a decision to fire has to have been made, and evaluation of the surrounding area has to have been made, and it has to be appropriate for the circumstances. It's real easy to think of the hypothetical hostage shot where you should probably get the gun all the way out, stopped, have verified sights, and then maybe you're going to begin the moving finger out of register and toward the trigger process because the demands are so extremely high. That's just an easy hypothetical example that's pretty far afield for most people, but certainly possible.
Sure.
So putting the finger on the trigger starts at position three, which to me sounds too early, but in actuality, because the rest of the draw is progressing, again, assuming the circumstances support it, active trigger manipulation isn't even actually happening until the gun's decelerating at the end.
Well, and to be clear, too, I mean, I'd like to get your opinion on this, but we are talking about information for an above baseline level of shooter. So not someone that, you know, we're talking about stuff that comes after the which end does the bullet come out, right?
Quite a bit after it, I'd say.
Yeah. So here's a question. Here's kind of I'd be curious to get your thought on this. Is there anything that if you were not concerned about the context of if I mess this up, I shoot someone on accident, that you would teach differently? Like as far as here's the thing that I teach this way because in the real world there are downrange problems, there are there are unknown shooting issues, blah blah blah. But like if I were only teaching, here's the fastest way to do this on this known problem, is there anything that would majorly change for you or not?
Off the top of my head, maybe my answer would change if I had more time to think about it. But
sure.
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of the issue is that accuracy is enough of an issue just from the stopping the threat standpoint that I don't think you can. To me, the span of levels of care for that are like from pretty careful to extremely careful. Mm-hmm. And less than pretty careful is not, I don't think is really much of a thing.
Yeah.
Because of the need to still hit the target. I mean, even if everybody's in like a brickyard and there are pallets of bricks around everywhere and there are backstops everywhere and there's no way you're going to, and there's nobody there except the threat. I still don't think you get away from that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you add people moving or using barriers against you, especially if you add those things, again, never mind all the bystanders that don't even exist, I still don't think that you can get away from at least needing pretty careful pistol shooting.
Well, and that seems like something, too, where I think that, and we discussed this in our class, and I want to say I remember you sort of bringing it up in your class that we attended, but handgun rounds, it's not like you touch someone with one and all of a sudden they're done. Sometimes that happens, and if it does, cool, but you got to hit pretty small stuff, right?
Right. Well, and I think that it is useful to have a manner of shooting that spans, again, to just use these terms that I'm just pulling out of the air, pretty careful to extremely careful. If your only skill is extremely careful, and that's the only thing that you know and practice, another way to say that might be if every shot you are guaranteeing the hit.
Mm-hmm.
Like using the absolute maximum certainty that you can muster in firing that gun, there may be in some situations you may have a time problem, I think. And I mean, violence of action is a thing, and I'm not talking about sling shots in their direction. I'm not talking about countenance actual misses. I'm not talking about just hit them somewhere, anywhere, a bunch of times. I mean, having a level of care that is more like pretty careful, where you are attempting to shoot the right anatomical shots, but you're doing it in a manner that it's possible you'll generate some minor amount of error there.
Sure.
And maybe you end up shooting, to use a game term, maybe you end up shooting like 4A1C.
Yeah.
I'm not, as long as the circumstances support that, we're not talking the hostage shot again, I'm not sure that I have a big problem with that. But I think you've got to at least, at minimum, I think you're still roped into reasonably careful shooting with the handgun. I don't think there's really any way around out of that.
Well, so, and that's actually an interesting question. I think it supports being able to really go fast. So I know a ton of people that a .3 split is like a .30, right? Is them going as quick as they can and the wheels are falling off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, let me ask you this, and I was talking with Kirk about this as well. But if I said, hey, Gabe, you can only shoot .3 splits now. I've put a governor on your speed. Everything else is going the same. How careful and accurate are you shooting at .3?
Oh, it's been a little while since I looked at that, but off the top of my head, I think I, on a you know, unobstructed target without high consequence for, you know, missing or something, seven yards, you know, just shoot
yeah.
0.3 splits at 7 yards. I'm probably shooting about like a tennis ball size area, I think.
I bet it's even closer than that, dude. I would bet money that you could keep it in a 2-inch circle.
No, I don't think I can, because, and here's why I say that, the Frank Garcia dot drill is 2-inch circles at 7 yards,
right.
And I don't shoot that cleanly. I have some amount of error in it, so first of all, and those are at higher than 0.3 splits. Those are like 0.4 something, 0.5 something for those shots. But, you know, there may be some amount of psychological thing in there, because it's this all or nothing 2-inch circle.
Yeah.
If I have an A zone and you're telling me shoot at 0.3 splits, maybe it'll be closer to a 2-inch circle than a 3-inch circle. But my answer is still, I think I'm shooting about like a tennis ball.
Yeah. You're not missing, though.
He's ascribing skills to you, Gabe, that he just is, you know.
Well, so it's one of those things where I assume, and this is actually pretty common, right? So I consider Gabe to be a better shooter than I am. But Gabe's a better shooter than I am in an overall package. That doesn't mean that there aren't things that I might be slightly better at in like a minutia way, is probably where I'm coming up with that. Because, like, if you tell me 0.3, I can shoot a pretty – I am shooting a very small group at speed at 0.3, right?
I kind of want to test this now.
We have
I kind of do, too. I'm not really sure. I haven't looked at this specific thing maybe ever, or I haven't noticed it in a while.
I don't think there's any reason to look at it super specifically. The only point that I was trying to make is that the amount of time that it takes someone like you or I or someone else to go from pretty careful to extremely careful is not necessarily the amount of time that someone else would take to be utilizing the same level of care, and it sort of supports the argument that you really want to be able to go really fast, really consistently, so that when you slow down, you're still really fast.
I would agree. Yeah,
but we gotta go to break now. So I'll come up with another rando question to ask you when we come back. We're talking about anything I decide with Gabe White, and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment brought to you by BigTexOutdoors.com. BigTexOutdoors.com is the best place for you to find all of your everyday carry needs at the absolute best prices. Maybe you need all the lumens from Surefire at the lowest price? No problem. Spend too much time alone in your room and now you need an RMR? BigTexOutdoors.com has those. Glock accessories? Yes! Fast, cheap shipping, 100% hassle-free returns, all that and more. And best of all, BigTexOutdoors.com has Ike. He's a good man and thorough. I like Ike. Everybody likes Ike. And you'll like Ike, too. Visit BigTexOutdoors.com today and find out what happens when every customer is a friend, not just an order. So we're talking with Gabe White, and I'm still happy that I didn't mess that ad up because I've only read it twice now. And you guys should go check out BigTexOutdoors.com. But we're talking with Gabe White. Melody, did you have a question for Gabe? Or?
Yeah, I did. I think so. We were talking kind of about this idea of speed regulation, and I'm thinking we started this as like things that we start teaching people, and then they kind of progress and they kind of go away, from them as they progress as a shooter. Since you teach a lot, when do you start advocating for any kind of speed regulation, whether that's speeding up, whether that's slowing down? Because usually, at least in my understanding, a lot of the classes that you teach out and about are people who are already shooting really fast, and you're trying to kind of push them to new skills. But what about more beginner people?
Well, that describes more what I teach at the Public Safety Training Center. So we have a whole, foundational program for defensive handgun use, and it starts at the very basic level, the day one level of, here is all about a handgun, how to be safe with it, how to handle it safely, administrative things like general knowledge, storage. And then progressing on from there, and the next class is also kind of a pretty basic class, but where it's overlaid with defensive use of the handgun. And all of this is, and then it progresses on from there with an intermediate and advanced class. all of this is an established curriculum that I did not originally create. It certainly has my mark on it, and you know, because I'm the one who has to express it, so I have to express it my way, and so I've certainly have changed it, rewritten it to some extent, but I wasn't the originator of the program, and at some point it's possible that I'll revise it further. But what we do with regard to your question is in the basic pistol class and the basic defensive pistol class, the next one. In those two classes, we largely work with quite generous par times and just try to get people doing some reasonably accurate shooting in very generous par times. And after that, it continues to progress in the intermediate and advanced class. And ultimately, we're talking about the first handful of days of somebody's training. I mean, even though, it's basic to advanced in title, this is in the big long journey. This is very early in it, and so we never there are a lot of considerations, right, for self defense other than how fast are you shooting. We continue pushing them, but they never really have to have very fast splits. I mean, I don't think any part of our testing requires faster than like 0.5 second splits on I think any target, and we do some exercises where we maybe push them to shoot faster than that, just more as an exercise of awareness of, hey, pay attention to what the sights are doing while you're doing that, and just try to notice. It's more like an increase of awareness exercise than anything else. But none of the testing in that program really requires anything resembling a fast split in the big picture of things.
Except for, what do you consider fast? Like, when does something in your mind go to, now we're getting into the category, and I'm using bunny ears here, of fast.
Right. Well, I'm sure that this is going to sound real pedestrian to a lot of people, but I would put it most generally at a quarter second or less. Mm-hmm. And I know people get a lot faster than that, but quarter second conforms to that. That's about how fast. Think of the research from the Force Science Research Center. When you put handgun in untrained person's hands and they're unburdened by technique or concept of, I need to manipulate the trigger this way, they just want to attack with the handgun as hard and fast as possible, they're getting about quarter second splits, right? Something like 4-ish shots a second coming in somebody's direction. And so if we can, if somebody is manipulating the trigger at least that fast, and I know people get a lot faster than that, but at least that fast, to me, that's in the category of fast splits. Now, in the big picture of things, sure, yeah, highly skilled shooters, yeah, they tend to split faster than that. But some people are also not real fast splitters. I'm not a real fast splitter. I mean, most of my shots are not faster than 0.2. I mean, I'm like, shooting aggressively for me is like 0.18 to 0.21 splits on a 7-yard body A zone. I just don't have a super fast trigger finger.
Well, and that's so. Like, one of the things that I like to see is, like, where I lose time versus where I make up time on certain stuff. And I can pull 0.18s, 0.19s without trying super hard. And I think that, I mean, like, if I'm going to the point where, like, I can induce trigger freeze, if I mess it up, I can get down around, like, 0.14, 0.15.
Yeah.
Oh, I can.
I've seen that on the timer like once. I think one time I shot a 0.14, 0.15 split, but well, generally
fastest
it's not
I've
me.
Ever done is one a 0.18. That's fastest.
Well, but I mean, it's an unnecessary. It doesn't mean anything. It's completely unnecessary, and it doesn't get me anything to be able to do that, and I can't do it reliably, but I can do it. Here's a question that I kind of had. What to you, because I'm doing a 1-day thing now that is kind of like my take on an intermediate, just technical skills class, and you do an incredible 2-day technical skills class that's got some tactics thrown in. But what would an advanced class look like for you? Just an advanced shooting class. What would that be? Because I don't know that I've ever seen what I would consider to be one, and I'm curious what your thoughts are.
So you mean just shooting?
Yeah, just shooting. No tactics. Just shooting.
And what about gun handling?
Sure.
Okay. I think it would include moving from firing when the gun is, this is especially off the draw. Mm-hmm. Moving from firing when the gun is stopped to firing while it is stopping.
Nice.
On whatever degree of target we can make that happen on. And as an example, in our advanced class at the Public Safety Training Center, that's centered around trying to get the 1.5 second first shot to an A zone at 7 yards from concealment, which, you know, in the internet world, definitely that's very ho-hum. And definitely there are a lot of people who can do quite a lot better than that. But I remember going through that class when I was first learning, and I remember how very hard that was to actually make happen. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's some baseline level of competency. Frankly, I think that is getting reasonably advanced.
Yeah.
If somebody can actually do that pretty reliably. Now, if you up it to 2 seconds or maybe 1.75, there are a whole lot more people that can do that. But the basic thing I'm trying to say is, moving from firing after the gun is stopped to firing while it is stopping and getting more comfortable with that and getting the visual and mental judgment to go along with that, because you're not, it needs to be aimed and not just stick the gun out there and whack the trigger.
Right.
You need to actually aim it. And so that requires seeing what's going on and paying mental attention to what's going on and recognizing what level of movement in the gun, what level of quality of the sight picture or dot or whatever visual references equates to this is good enough for this shot.
Yeah. Well, and that'd be super interesting to check that out. But we're at the end of the show, so we gotta
already.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
I have
right?
a sad face because I'm like,
well,
I have a question
was,
for you.
There was more to that answer. I wasn't gonna say the draw. The first shot off the draw constitutes advanced shooting.
No, I know. But see, this is great because we'll have you back on in a month and we'll talk about it more. Gabe, thanks so much, dude. I always appreciate it. Hey, guys, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Haha. And keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.